Good evening, everyone, and hello. You're listening to Revision Media at revisionmedia.org. Today is Wednesday, September 25, 2019. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Arcane Semantics. I have a special guest joining us once again tonight, Mr. Gregory McGill. Hello, Gregory.
Hey, Richard. Thanks for having me on again.
Hey, it's a pleasure to have you here, Gregory. How have you been? I'm sure the listeners are curious to hear how things have been going for you.
Well, terrific. Everything's been great. I've been... my wife is awesome. I like my job. I love my friends. I've got this little bubble I live in. I live in the woods. You know, we have a house and it's literally like in the middle of the woods. And I'm pretty happy. Pretty happy with life. Life is good. Life is very good. How about you, buddy?
Oh, great. I mean,
awesome.
Things vary a bit financially. I really have to get out of the big city. I mean, a Zionist mega city here in Chicago. And if I had a bit more of your lifestyle being by the woods, that would be all I would really need, I think, to complete my quality of living. But yeah, I love interacting with the station here, you know, with all you guys, networking, getting all our voices out there, because we certainly can't control anything in the corporate media, you know?
Oh, wow, the mainstream media, the JMSM is 100% completely owned by Jews, and there's like six companies that own every single bit, every single media outlet. They're just all, there aren't any independent ones anymore unless you go on the interweb. Internet, that's it. That's our last voice.
Yeah.
You know, journalism is gone.
And the narrative of everything is shaped by these people. There's a Judaic mindset which shapes all of the censorship these days, all of the news stories where they're trying to take our culture, even this gender agenda, perverting our youth. And, of course, just completely trying to decimate our country with these demographic assaults, you know, these immigration quotas. It's all about cultural Marxism. This is all coming from the international Jew.
I'm sure. Too bad America didn't listen to Henry Ford, huh?
Yes.
Right? And, I mean, Henry, wasn't that his, that was the pamphlet he put in every Model T sold in the glove box or whatever it was, or Model A's, I'm not sure which one he did, but it was in every one of them. The international Jew, the world's foremost problem. And he also owned a news. He owned the newspaper in Dearborn, Michigan. I think it was the Dearborn Press or something or whatever. But Henry Ford owned that. So there was. Those were the days when we could, you know, there were a lot of independent owners of media, you know, the media outlets. And, you know, one by one, they're all gone.
Yes. I am reminded when you mention Henry Ford, of Charles Lindbergh as well. Charles Lindbergh was rather Jew-wise. I have a quote from the
Probably why the baby was kidnapped. You know, his dad was a state senator or something. Wasn't that what it was?
That's what
Lindbergh.
I recall.
And he was the one opposed to the Federal Reserve, and you know, one of them that was opposed to it.
And for those who aren't aware, Charles Lindbergh was a famous heroic aviator. He tried to warn his fellow Americans that Jews controlled America and were using their power to force America into World War II. This quote I have here from September 11th, 1941. "The Jews are one of the principal forces attempting to lead the U.S. into war. The Jews' greatest danger in this country lies in their large ownership and influence in our motion pictures, our press, our radio, and our government. I am saying that the leaders of the Jewish race wish to involve us in the war for reasons that are not American.
Right. And has anything really changed since then?
No. And it seems worse now. I mean, we're in like a Weimar, we're in Weimar Republic, revisited.
Weimarica. Weimarica now. Yeah. It's just a more morally, it's a cesspool of degeneration and reprobation, and it's just horrible. It is when you turn on the electric Jew, which is what I like to call the TV. You know, turn on the EJ there and see. You know, that's what you see, and that's, you know, of course that's what they want to shape is, you know, that's that kind of world.
And I've, you know, that's, seen, yeah, so many lists, like you mentioned, of how many companies, especially media companies, are detailed with the owners' names. And yes, it is so completely Jewish owned and controlled. And censorship, and, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
How we're supposed to think about everything, all of this anti-white racist sort of rhetoric we're hearing, all of this white supremacy sort of talk, even when they link them to all these shootings, you know, they can't wait to link a white lone gunman motive to the shooting agendas whenever they can. But where did this start? You know, all this censorship, all of this holier than thou delineating of all of our social norms. This came from a fear, a guilt, a shame, and a lot of this is based on their Holocaust myth. This narrative, this official narrative of the Holocaust. So that's what we're here, to tackle today. Holocaust narrative exposed. We're doing an expose on this sham.
The hoax. The holo hoax.
Indeed. So, I mean, where do we start? You know, I mean, do we
start with the definition of the literal definition of the word Holocaust. What is the literal definition like in their biblical or in their writings and all that? It's a sacrifice by fire. That's literally what it means, the word.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
so
we hear
that makes perfect
guessings.
Sense that they named this thing that they created, they named it that because that's exactly what they did to Germany. They burned it from one end to the other. They burned every town they could. They burned every infrastructure. They just burned it. I mean, they used so much napalm and fire bombs on Germany, it wasn't even funny. So it's kind of another slap in the face, mocking, you know, look, it's the Holocaust, which is what, you know, they always point their finger at, you know, to accuse people of what they themselves are doing. We know that, right?
Yeah, so, firestorm. Yeah, that was how how they retaliated.
It means sacrifice by fire. You know, it's a Kabbalistic, whatever, Judaic thing, you know. So,
although we hear a lot about the gassings, we'll hear this narrative of the ovens. You were sending me an image trying to detail the official claims of these ovens as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you wanted to go there or where were you taking this?
There's so much you could get into because it's so, just the entire narrative is so easily debunked and there's so much information now, you know, about that. It's pretty hard to even figure out where to narrow it down and where to start. But, you know, you're right. You're right by starting to say as long as people believe the evil Nazi myth and the hollow hoax, as long as they believe that the Jews have a free pass to do whatever they want to this entire world, actually, they have that free pass. There's nothing's going to stop them. Who's going to stop them? Because the Holocaust, right? You can't stop them. They can do whatever they want. You know, that's what they're doing. They look at Palestine, and, you know, that's just one thing.
We look at how many ways history has been distorted, not just in print, but physically. Like I was looking at that image I just shared with you. You've probably seen before the reality of Auschwitz. They show, example, the one chimney they built on the building after the war to support their claim.
Liberated Auschwitz. The Soviets did. It wasn't the Americans. That's one thing. And they built that stuff after.
They put
It was a hub. I
Didn't
was
leave
a hub.
holes.
There were like nine. There were like 90 camps throughout the whole system. 90 work camps. About that was what I've seen in my research. And Auschwitz was very much a hub. It was a central one where all these different things would go out from there. You know, all these different work. So that's probably why they use it as the shrine. It was like the biggest one. It had the most processing and stuff.
And we just have a lot of the accouterments, which it was.
Had a soccer field, had a cinema, yeah. Had a brothel. All kind. They have their own money. Yeah, what kind of death camp has one? We know, you and I know that the real death camps were the Rhine Meadows prison camps right after the war. That Eisenhower rounded up all the German soldiers and starved them to death in those pens, and it was over a million of them. Well over a million. Every figure I've seen is up to 1.7 million Germans. So how come every time you see a picture of so-called Holocaust stacked bodies and stuff, they're all military-age men, every one of them. You don't see children stacked up or you know, women or anything like that. It's all military-age men, and those were supposed pictures of you know, the death camps. Well, they were death camps, but they were Eisenhower's, not Germany's.
Mm-hmm. But they had, in Auschwitz, they had currency, their own currency, a library, as you mentioned, a brothel, theater, soccer team, pool with diving board, post office. They had things like horse grooming, rabbit breeding, a greenhouse, an orchestra, and dentists, no less.
Well, that just makes sense right there. That the camps were probably one of the safer places to be during the bombing and things like that, because the cities were being wiped out.
Well,
you know,
the factories still needed these people for the war effort.
Infrastructure, well, when the infrastructure was completely wiped out, that's when the camps got fucked.
And then, of course, for the war effort, they needed these people in the factories. So it's not like they didn't want to take care of the people in the work camps, keep them healthy.
They wouldn't do that. They needed them. They needed them to make things. Absolutely.
People just have a completely opposite view, where they think Hitler and Germany were out to take over the world. But look, this is being told to us by the ones who are in the process of
story. Yeah, right. Take over the world. Right. Exactly. Now, they were just trying to stop the people who did.
Yeah. I mean, look at the project for the new American century, Greater Israel. This is what is trying to take over the world. You know,
they
look at these quotas
they've almost
across Europe for immigration, anti-Semitism laws galore in all these countries popping up.
Something big, you know, we have so many questions about this, the thing that we're forbidden, not only forbidden not to question, but by law, commanded by law not to question it in many places, 22 countries, I think it is right now, or you go to prison. So how could that be? And there's people sitting in jail right now for Holocaust denial, a bunch of them.
Well,
you know?
I have
so,
here
I
a
mean,
quote from
not supposed to forget
Theodore,
it.
Theodore Herzl, founder of Zionism. Yeah. In 1897, the founder of Zionism encouraged anti-Semitism as a way to manipulate us. This quote here, It is essential that the suffering of Jews become worse. This will assist in realization of our plans. I have an excellent idea.
Threw him under the bus. Right?
He says, I should introduce anti-Semites to liquidate Jewish wealth. The anti-Semites will assist us thereby in that they will strengthen the persecution and oppression of Jews. The anti-Semites shall be our best friends.
Yeah, the Zionists giving up a lot of the, I'm sure that they, but you know, the International Red Cross documents, I'm sure you've seen those, or 273,000 or whatever it was, the documented deaths by the IRC, they went in all the camps. So, and that was a total number of deaths in the camp. It wasn't even Jews, it was everybody. There was all kinds of other people in there, not just criminals were in there and communists and, you know, no. Yeah. We're not denying that.
And these
people lost. Go ahead.
These desires, though, to create more anti-Semitism, that along with the Holocaust narrative is a lot of what gives these people such power in our countries. I have another quote here to mention while we're quoting from Ezra Pound, 1942.
Oh, yeah.
At some time, the Anglo-Saxon may awaken to the fact that the non-Jew nations are shoved into wars in order to destroy themselves, to break up their structure, to destroy their social order, to destroy their populations. You know, and this is, there's so much in the Bible.
He was another one that warned us.
I mean, some of these quotes, now go and smite Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass. That's Jewish
Amalek
Old Testament, 1 Samuel 15:3. I have another interesting little quote here that just, well, it seems like some of these just put a bit of an idea towards subversion, you know, even in biblical times into these people's minds. I mean, it's even in their biblical religious writings to subvert countries. This, when you look at it more and more.
They've been doing the same shit for thousands of years, and they haven't told the truth about anything in thousands of years. So why would we believe their narrative on this one? That's another thing. You can do the math and do the science, or just simply realize that these fuckers haven't told the truth about anything in a long, long time. Since the beginning.
And then
they've been liars from the beginning, and that's what Christ said. You're a liar from the beginning.
Even before this World War II and this Holocaust narrative. I mean, when we look back to the Russian Revolution, it's sometimes glossed over, even glorified by certain pro-Jewish, pro-communist.
The Bolshevik Revolution is horrible, horrible, horrible. What they did to the Romanovs, oh my God.
And then follow that by, at the end of World War II, mostly in Ukraine, but Germans as well. I mean, Ukraine had the largest genocide, though,
if you want to talk about
real genocide.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah, that's a real one. And a lot of those pictures come from that, too.
The Holodomor.
A lot of pictures come from that, too, the so-called Holocaust pictures.
Another thing I wanted
to say about the word Holocaust, because we said about the root of the word, a sacrificial fire. Another thing about, they didn't even use that term until like the 70s. There was a TV movie, made-for-TV movie called The Holocaust or something that came out. And then it stuck. You know, it really stuck. They were able to finally get it branded. In the early 70s, they got it branded, because you can't even find the word Holocaust in all those, like anything from the 50s or early 60s or anything like that. They don't use that word at all, you know, in any of the, you know. Well, they have used that word for a long time. Actually, that word has been used for a long time, but it wasn't used and referred to World War II until maybe the late 60s or whatever. That's when they got that moniker to stick.
Those
the
are
Holocaust
the
word.
I've heard that accounted by others as well. But here's that other Bible quote. If you should say in your heart, "These nations are greater than I, how can I dispossess them?" You shall not be afraid of them. You shall well remember that the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all Egypt. The great trials which your eyes see, and the signs of the wonders, and the mighty hand of the outstretched arm by which the Lord your God brought you out. So, this quote, "The nations are greater than I. How can I dispossess them?" I mean, they're reading their scripture and thinking about dispossessing nations.
From its toxic roots, Judaism reaches back into all of its toxic roots all come from the Old Testament, every freaking bit of it. In fact, that's really their book, is the OT, you know, and then the Talmud is just refined, you know, it's more the Torah scrolls and all that. They're just more refined from that. But it really comes back to the vengeful, hateful God of the Old Testament, a real colorful God. But, yeah.
And then some of this may have related, it's debatable to what extent, the immigrations to Palestine. We have lists here even from the Israeli Control Board of Statistics. The Zionist immigration to Palestine between 48 and 2015. But of course, going back to the early part of the century, there had already been agreements, and people being relocated there. They just wanted to ramp it up a bit come World War II. But this, this is something that some attribute to greater anti-Semitism. 1916 was the Balfour Declaration, Lord Balfour to Lord Rothschild. And we had, ever since then, an increased desire for that as well, to get Jews to relocate to Israel. Right. But to this day, many point out a larger amount of international Jewry is controlled by American Jews. Would you say that is the case?
Well, I don't, you know, they're international. They wherever they reside, they're just parasiting off of. I mean,
well, but a large amount of them are right here in our country.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. Most of them don't want to live in Israel because it's the swindling's better everywhere else. They can't Jew a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
So they can't suck up a country for a nation for all it's worth. There, they can't do it to each other. They don't do it to each other. That's their number one rule, is to not, you know, mess with each other. But it's a free for all when it comes to Gentiles. They made that very clear in all their writings. That's between them. No, you can't. Like the Ten Commandments. All right, the straight out of the Old Testament, right? Well, those were a set of intertribal Hebrew law. The laws between them. And it meant when it was talking about your neighbor, thy neighbor, it was assumed all your neighbors were Jews. You know, those were rules for themselves, not for everyone else. You know?
Absolutely. And as far as how the youth, at least with the ultra Orthodox, I mean, they're taught that non-Jews are evil.
Right.
It's common for them to be taught. We have accounts of 3-year-old ultra Orthodox Jewish children told the non-Jews are evil in worksheets, even produced by the London School. Quotes here, it's not uncommon to be taught non-Jewish children, non-Jewish people are evil at ultra-Orthodox Jewish schools. These teachers are conditioning at that early an age with this supremacism. And like you say,
the Jewish idea of being God's chosen is the very invention of racial supremacy. It's the very invention of it. You know, which is the invention of racism.
One account attributing it to Leon Trotsky. One claim is that in 1927, Trotsky invented the word racist, to browbeat all dissenters of communist ideology.
That stops debate. Because you start calling them names.
But yeah, this Holocaust is really what makes people shudder in fear to criticize Jews, makes them put up with all the censorship. They're attacking our First Amendment more and more, inching away, chiseling away. Right now, it's mostly about BDS. But you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. We can't even let that happen. But they're trying to do it right now.
Right. Let me read this to you real quick. I think Trevor wrote this. You can't debate a Jew because they are dishonest and will offer no legitimate support to their argument. They are not interested in truth. They are only interested in concealing it. As long as people believe in their hollow hoax and Nazi propaganda, these parasites will be free to do whatever they want, get out of jail free every time, all while inflicting as much death and destruction any place on earth that is humanly possible. It's a good line there. As long as people believe in their hollow hoax and evil Nazi propaganda, you know, and they do, people still swallow it. It's still very much their get out of jail free card.
Now, we mentioned the Red Cross and the exaggerated accounts of even total numbers of Jews who were even in Europe at that time.
Oh, yeah. I've got census information. I mean, I could send it to you right now, but it doesn't matter. We're talking about the same thing. There weren't even 6 million. And they've been using that 6 million number since the Civil War. And you can look at the New York Times has a whole bunch. There's I've seen them all put together where they found them. There's article after article of them saying 6 million Jews were displaced. 6 million Jews are in danger. 6 million are being persecuted. And they use the word Holocaust a few times too, you know? So it's all very much something that they've been trying to get to stick for the past few hundred years, couple hundred years. And they did. They got it to stick after World War II, you know? They got that story.
Speaking of the definitions, you mentioned the definition of Holocaust that made me think of this international definition of anti-Semitism I have here, adopted by the British government, states, among other things, that the following are anti-Semitic: making mendacious, dehumanizing, demonizing, or stereotypical allegations about Jews as such, or the power of Jews as collective, such as, especially, but not exclusively, the myth about a world Jewish conspiracy, or of Jews controlling the media, economy, government, or other societal institutions. And then we have, if that wasn't enough,
and denying the fact. They're making it illegal to say those things.
Absolutely. Well, we're in America at the moment. This is at least still free for us.
For right now. Yep. We're still got the Second Amendment and the first one, you know?
And continuing here, international definition of anti-Semitism: denying the fact, scope, mechanisms, e.g. gas chambers, or intentionally of the genocide of the Jewish people at the hands of National Socialist Germany and its supporters and accomplices during World War II, and then they put in parentheses, the Holocaust.
Right.
And then the final heading here for international definition of anti-Semitism: drawing comparisons of contemporary Israeli policy to that of the Nazis.
Right. Yeah. Well, they're not the new Nazis. They're just the old Bolsheviks. So they're right about that one. Everything else they said there, you know. So, but anti-Semitism or Judeophobia is nothing but the rejection of Jewish supremacism. That's all it is. The fact we're not allowed to talk about it, criticize it, whatever. It indicates that really we don't have free speech, but also who's controlling it.
And, you know? Of course, this is infiltrating the school systems. With Common Core, it was accelerated, this Holocaust mandatory education in the school systems. Our churches, though, this pro-Israel sentiment throughout our churches, they preach.
Well, they're all 501c3s, right? Right, Richard?
Yeah.
They're all those churches are 501c3s. So they lose their tax exempt status if they do not stick to that Zionist doctrine word by word. They all have to teach the same shit. Every single one. Or they get their tax card pulled.
Yeah, I can see that being a big motivation for them, Gregory.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, in the school system, they're taught about gas chambers. They're taught about ovens. And, right? Of course, the Diary of Anne Frank. Do you want to touch on that a bit?
Anne Fraud? It's been shown to be, you know, yeah, we've seen that a bunch of times.
Listeners might not know too much about all of the ways it's been debunked. If you could name some
bunch
of these.
Well, first of all, the ballpoint pen that half of it was written in wasn't even invented until the 50s, the type of ballpoint pen it was written in. So that's one part of analysis. And then the dad or whoever it was, he was like an author or something, and there was even a court case or something with it where there was a fictional book and it's all these things. There was an Anne Frank, and she died of typhus in the camp. There's a bunch of other. I've seen other things about it being debunked. The main thing is that half of it's written in something that didn't exist at the time.
Most of this was written by some older gentleman, isn't that right?
Yeah. I don't remember all the other ways it's been debunked, but there's a whole bunch.
Well, yeah, it's a complete work of fiction.
It's, It's a fictional book. So is Schindler's List. It's all fiction. Actually,
oh, yeah.
Schindler's List won Best Fiction or whatever for the book it was, when it was a book, you know, and then when they converted it to a movie, all of a sudden it became true. You know, Schindler's List.
How
yeah,
convenient.
I mean, they've been pushing these retarded Holocaust movies down our throats since the, you know, 70s. I mean, you know what I mean? They've been coming at us like that since then. You know?
Yeah, that's pretty much when they saw how powerful a tool it could be.
What a moneymaker it was, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a big moneymaker. It's a bazillion. I'm going to say bazillions because I'm not even sure, but I'm sure it's in the billions of what it makes. Well, it's beyond that. It's given, like we said, it's given them the ability to take over and do whatever they want unanswered. They can just, they have no, you know, they're not held.
Double standards across the board.
Yeah, it's a free pass for everything. It's that powerful of a lie. But don't you think the truth is more powerful than anything? We know it is. The truth is why we're into this, because it is true that
Absolutely. All
that stuff is a, you know, so it's being destroyed. It's being destroyed piece by piece, and the internet had a lot to do with that. But other things, too, I mean, a lot of kids my son's age and stuff, a lot of them just don't buy it,
mm-hmm.
you know? So
they're not as conditioned.
Right. We've had
younger.
It. Right, exactly. That's totally it. Yeah.
And they've seen.
They've
seen by now, they've been growing up with the internet, seeing how their parents' generation are already learning how
right.
much we've been lied to our whole life.
Bingo. Yep.
So even if they don't want to agree with everything of their parents, just the way children naturally are rebellious, they still can see that this system is not to be trusted.
Well, let's
that's why they hate
the international kids, because the world is in a really bad way right now, and it hurts to think about it when you have a lot of empathy, like I do, and I'm sure you do too. And another reason why we look for truth is because we do have empathy, and we don't want to see any human suffering. We want everybody to live and have free and, you know, happy life, or not just have, just have the ability to, you know, it saddens me when I think of the war stuff and all. I get really bummed out.
Yeah, I mean, that's curious because we talk about how we're returning to a Weimar Republic sort of a state,
yeah.
But
sure,
that's when
that
things turned around in 1933. And then we hear a lot of these same claims now. I think a lot of people are concerned that with the internet especially, there could be another pushback against international Jewry. I mean,
yeah,
I
think you're right. I think they're shitting their pants right now, yeah. I think they're really
DHS,
starting to get worried.
DHS, Department of Homeland Security, they just now added white supremacy to their list of threats, and this hasn't been updated at all since 9/11 when it came out.
The only real white supremacists are Jews, man. They're not, they masquerade as whites. They're only whites when they get caught doing something illegal or wrong or whatever. They get caught, then they're white. Any other time, they can't stop praising their Jewishness, you know. But as soon as they get caught into something, and then, oh, they're white, you know. Yeah. Nice trick, Jews. We see what you did.
Yeah, religion and race, interchangeable when convenient. That's a big one for them. We're starting
yeah.
to see that.
That's why we're
by
not,
a lot of the groups they control.
Religion
we'll see
is
that
too
by
big
a lot of
topic.
A lot of groups, South Africa, even here in the U.S., there are double standards.
Yeah.
You'll see from all these groups with their accusations of racism or cultural appropriation. That's a one-way street as well for these people, right? But
like you hit on it, cultural Marxism. You know?
Yeah, but I mean, this alleged killing of 6 million is an utter lie. Everything about the gas chambers, certainly
everything
about the ovens.
There's no evidence, no scientific evidence. No. Are you familiar with the Lecter report and Mr. Fred Lecter?
No, not too well.
Oh, this is a good one. Okay, you need to get hip to our listeners need to get hip to Fred. Fred, who's a guy? You can still find him on Facebook. He's still, I mean, I had him as a friend on there when I was allowed on Facebook. Now, you know, but anyway, he is one of the world's leading experts on gas chamber technology. He builds them for governments. Okay, there's like not anybody more qualified. He's one of the few people in the world that knows really knows. All right. He did analysis where they said they had they said they had gas chamber. They couldn't find any cyanide residue. He debunks the whole thing. And this guy is the biggest. It's the Lecter Report. Lecter, Fred Lecter, and he actually is a scientist, and you know, thoroughly looked at if there would be. Oh, he said there's no way that those things could have held the gas and the. Well, and we know Zyklon B was a pesticide anyway, commercially available one. Fucking, you know, Nazis are an invention of Hollywood. That's the bottom line, and allied, and war propaganda. That's the only two. That's it. They didn't fucking exist. They didn't weren't doing that stuff. They weren't barbecuing babies alive and tearing them in half and throwing them on bonfires and, you know, all this other crazy shit they say. Or and how would they pull off exterminating so many people? While their entire infrastructure was being blown to bits and burned to the ground, and all the cities were being burned to the ground, how did they possibly achieve anything close to that, doing something like that at all? It's just none of it logically makes any sense. None of it there's no evidence, none at all of any of this stuff. You know, it's just the whole thing is just a big made up story, and it's the story that's got us by the nuts. Pretty much holds humanity by the nuts.
And not only going from gas chambers to ovens, but these rumors of making Jews into soap and lampshades came about.
Yeah, that was just some of the stories, right? That they would put, I forget where the exact origin of that crap is. I mean, they even say that was, there's some stuff that, like, the official Holocaust story and the narratives from the museums and all that, any of the shrines they put up. They've even reduced the number. They've even, like, stuff like that, you know, some of them. I don't know what the latest is on that, actually, but I that one's, like, not even, they don't even bring that up anymore, soap and lampshades, mm-hmm. You know, because people
they
clearly
try
just don't
that
believe
one.
It.
Yeah.
No, they don't try it. You don't even hear it anymore. You know, that one's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
pretty much they saw us doing more harm than good in the age of the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah, that probably was hurting them a little more than some of those stories. I mean, it's just, you know, there's so much you could, oh gosh, there's just so much to talk about with this stuff. I don't think that there's enough time to do all the, you know what I mean? With this
serious
topic,
analysis of
show after
debunking.
show after show.
Right. Debunking every bit. But yeah, I mean, They adjusted so many of these buildings to fit their narrative for the. I mean, people can visit Auschwitz to this day. They altered it quite a bit. Like I said, the smokestack, they added this huge smokestack. You can see photos from the past where it didn't exist. And holes that they cut in the ceiling claimed canisters of Zyklon B were dropped through. Of course, there's no evidence to support, as you say, any of this.
Nothing. None of it. You know, something I wanted to tell people is that when I grew up believing this whole thing, it wasn't until 6-7 years ago or whatever that I finally really, you know, dove in. It just started even cursory research on it, and I realized what an absurd story it was. You know, right away, I was like, oh, my God. I didn't just go about, like, you know, it wasn't an overnight thing either. You have to, you know.
Sure.
But what we ended up finding through our research is that the real Holocaust was perpetuated on the Axis powers. That's who really, on Germany, that's who the real Holocaust was on. More Germans died after the war than during it. You know?
Absolutely. And I mentioned how Ukraine as well experienced they called it the Holodomor.
The Holodomor,
but
yeah.
That's where the largest numbers were. This is Jewish communist forces killing.
That's how they really do it. That's how you run a death camp. No tattoos, no barracks, no tents, no none of that. Nope, you just put them in pens, giant pens, barbed wire them and machine guns outside the pens, and you starve them to death. And that's how they fucking did it. That's how the Eisenhower death camps worked. I'm sure that's what they did in the hall in the door and all that. That's how they do it. You starve them to death. It only takes a month. They're all dead.
Mm-hmm.
After they try to all kill each other, because they're just freaking out at this. That must have just been the most hell. The Rhine camps were it's just incredible. And it's the most documented genocide ever. There's like movie reel after movie reel. They've got the whole thing on tape of what they did to these Germans. And a lot of it's been found. A lot of the stuff you can go on to YouTube, and I don't know how much of it's on YouTube anymore, but just type in the Rhine camps. The Rhine Meadows prison camps, Eisenhower's Rhine Meadows prison camps, And there's some long documentaries about it. It's pretty amazing.
I have.
Oh, and Eisenhower was a Jew, right? I mean, we know that, right? His West Point graduation photo, I have it somewhere from his, and it said when they described themselves as the terrible Swedish Jew. That's what it said. That's what he described himself as.
All right. I was not aware, actually.
Oh, yeah. No, he literally was a Jew. He hated Germans. And you know how much he hated Patton, right? And we know that none of us know more about World War II than General Patton. And he said we fought the wrong enemy. And none of us know more about World War II than him.
Right.
Hey, that's that. Yeah.
And I have a lot of documentation as well, since we brought up the Russian Revolution, confirming how much of a Jewish role there was.
Willie knows.
Just the whole Bolshevik beginnings of what became the Soviet Union, overtaking of the Tsar. Just how much.
What are you looking at in
a role? Because
a
some,
year, was that like
some will try to debate this. Some will try to debate this out there. They try to remove Jews from communism, from all of these crimes of the past.
They're the same. One and the same. They're synonymous.
Yeah. I mean, you'll have a lot of Jews on Patriot Radio these days who try to separate all of this, try to suggest that Jews are not part of any of this. And, of course, these same people are often trying to defend Karl Marx.
Right. Yeah. Well, they're communists, and they're liars. These guys, especially like people like Jewish Voice for Peace or any of those, they're the worst. Ben Shapiro and all those guys, they're the worst, man.
Okay, maybe this is a good time to play that clip. We were bringing up
the 6 million.
We mentioned the 6 million figure. And, well, you mentioned how much it was even brought up in the 1800s as well, in the 19th century. But, what I have here are some of the, this is a condensed account of some of the newspaper references in the 20th century. Right. Up until, but before the alleged Holocaust. This is, therefore, the earliest ones on here, the early 1900s going into the very beginnings of Hitler's reign. Actually, I think the last quotes are really 38, 39, but it's a very short clip. And I have excellent video versions that show the entire papers. I have longer one that's like 22 minutes. But this is a nice condensed little one. It's like 6 minutes long. Maybe we could check with your friend. Maybe we'll hear back from him when it's done playing.
I just texted him and said, call him as soon as you can. So I'm sure he's aware.
Cool. I'll put on.
Hopefully he gets
this
in.
Little...
It'd be great to hear from him. But okay. Wait,
looks like he's here now. hello, Will.
Yeah, I'm back. I'll mute myself, and then when I'm it'll just be a few more minutes.
Okay,
a few more
sounds
minutes.
Good.
We got you. Well, it's going to be about 6 minutes. Richard's going to play an excerpt here for us.
Cool,
the listeners.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, sounds good.
We'll all stand by.
Excellent. Well, here's 10 mentions. So, folks, here's 10 mentions of the 6 million Jews figure in the newspapers throughout the early 20th century, before World War II.
Here's 10 newspapers between the years of 1915 and 1938. The first newspaper is The Sun of New York. New York, June the 6th, 1915. And the article is called Horrors Worse Than Kishinev, Charged Against Russia Today. Since the destruction of the Temple in Jerusalem, the Jewish people have had no darker page in their history than that which the Russian government is writing today. 6 million Jews, one half of the Jewish people throughout the world, are being persecuted, hounded, humiliated, tortured, starved. Thousands of them have been slaughtered. Hundreds of thousands of Jews, old men, women and children, are being driven mercilessly from town to town. Dear brethren, have mercy on the 6 million Jews in Russia and take our part. The New York Times, October the 18th, 1918, page 12, and the article is called $1 billion fund to rebuild Jewry. There it is. 6 million souls will need help to resume normal life when war is ended. 6 million Jews need help. The New York Times, September the 8th, 1919, page 6, and the article is called Ukrainian Jews Aim to Stop Pogroms. Mass meeting hears that 127,000 Jews have been killed and 6 million are in peril. We come out now before the world with a determined slogan, those pogroms must stop, said the president in his annual message. It is only a question of holding these facts continually before the civilized world. We must not permit the world to slumber. This fact that the population of 6 million souls in Ukraine and in Poland have received notice through action and by word that they are going to be completely exterminated. The New York Times, the date, November the 12th, 1919, page 7. The article is called Tells Sad Plight of Jews. Felix M. Warburg says they were the worst sufferers in the war. The successive blows of contending armies have all but broken the back of European Jewry, he said, and have reduced to tragically unbelievable poverty, starvation and disease. About 6 million souls, or half the Jewish population of the earth. It's the Atlanta Constitution, February 23rd, 1920. The article's on the front page here. It's called $50,000 raised in city to save suffering Jews. So I'll go to page 3. He called upon the Atlanta Jews to arise to the occasion and to contribute to the emergency fund in order that the lives of 6 millions of Jewish people may be saved. Rabbi Marx made an eloquent plea for generous responses to the call of the representatives of the Jewish Relief Fund. He drew a graphic picture of the starvation and suffering of the 6 million Jews who live in Eastern Europe and Palestine. Thousands upon thousands of our people have died of starvation and pestilence, and thousands more will die, he said. The New York Times, the date, Friday, May the 7th, 1920, page 11. And the article is called The Jewish War Aid Gets $100,000 Gift. The Fund for Jewish War Sufferers in Central and Eastern Europe, where 6 millions face horrifying conditions of famine, disease and death, was enriched yesterday by a contribution of $100,000 from Nathan Strauss. Where 6 millions face horrifying conditions of famine, disease and death. New York Times, Wednesday, July the 20th, 1921, page 2. And the article is called Begs America, Save 6 Million in Russia. Massacre threatens all Jews as Soviet power wanes, declares Krinin, coming here for aid. Russia's 6 million Jews are facing extermination by massacre. As the famine is spreading, the counter-revolutionary movement is gaining, and the Soviet control is waning. The Gazette, Montreal, Tuesday, December the 29th, 1931, page 6. 6 million Jews face starvation. 6 million. Bad conditions in southeastern Europe reported by Rabbi Wise. Fears crisis at hand. 6 million Jews in eastern Europe face starvation, and even worse during the coming winter. New York Times, Sunday, May the 31st, 1936. Page 14, and the article is called Americans Appeal for Jewish Refuge. The petition, in expressing the opinion of enlightened Christian leadership in the United States favoring a larger Jewish immigration into Palestine, stressed the intolerable sufferings of the millions of Jews in the European Holocaust. Great Britain has it within her power to throw open the gates of Palestine and let in the victimized and persecuted Jews escaping from the European Holocaust. The New York Times. This is dated February 23rd, 1938. Page 23. Jewish teachers chided by Isaacs. Jewish tragedy pictured. A depressing picture of 6 million Jews in Central Europe deprived of protection or economical opportunities, slowly dying of starvation, all hope gone, was presented to the teachers by Jacob Tarshis. The Jewish tragedy started when Hitler came into power in 1933.
Well, and there we have it. 10 accounts, and that doesn't even consider before the 20th century, in the 19th century as well. Gregory, you mentioned how much the 6 million figure.
So, that's a whole bunch of them. Boy, oh boy, they're dying over and over again. They're like they're like herpes. They just keep coming back.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. They just keep reappearing in mass numbers, no matter how much you take out 6 million every couple of years. It's amazing.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they got that one to stick after World War II, though. That was a real, you know. Where they, and we haven't even covered the Nuremberg kangaroo court. Oh my God.
Yeah.
All rules of evidence were suspended. It's in the charter. You can read it. You can pull it up. You can pull up the freaking what they said, you know, what the tribunal. This tribunal shall not be bound by rules of evidence and something else. So how do you have a fucking trial with no evidence? Freaking show trials. Oh, they were.
We just had in February an announcement that the U.S. is to pay out new reparations for the Holocaust. The State Department announced additional reparation payments will be made to victims of the Holocaust as part of its claims program, covering in part Jewish people who were deported by France during World War II.
Yeah.
And so
they get like $35,000 for signing up and. Here it is.
It never ends.
9 million of the 16. What's that?
It never ends.
No. Just... And their kids get it, too. And they get $2,000 a month for life plus medical.
Yeah.
It's just an enormous.
I'm amazed at that
money,
part
cash.
As well, that the children inherit this. And this money.
It's a trauma gene.
Our taxpayer dollars continue going to their children.
Yeah, man, most of our taxes go to Jews for one way or the other, it seems, right? I mean, that
so,
one,
yeah, we might
actual,
as well.
Yeah. Well, it certainly goes to their industrial military complex.
Gregory, you could decide what we cover next. We have another hour here. So,
oh, wow.
If you want to decide what we cover before.
Oh, yeah. Anywhere the conversation goes is awesome.
Yeah. Please feel free to start. For the second hour, and yeah, the floor is yours.
Wow. Well, did we talk about like the sense of, you know, the population? I've got something here from the World Almanac, 1948, and it has all the numbers by broken down by like Christian, Catholics, Roman, Orthodox, Protestant, Jews. I can't read this other one. Whatever. It says. Oh, Mohammedan. That must be Muslim. Islam. And so, and according to this almanac, the population of Jews increased between 1933 and 1948 from 15,315,000 to 15,753,000. I'm just going to interject. Where the fuck did the $6 million go? Okay, and then but they actually got, there were more of them after the war, not less. And if you don't count, what about all the people that, all the Jews that converted or whatever because they wanted to get in on the scam? Or not converted, they just said they were, I don't know, it just seems like it was like a whole bunch of people that jumped on that one right away. Let's see here. Mm-hmm. So, okay, if the German government under Hitler had, as alleged, murdered 6 million Jews, those losses should have been reflected in the Jewish population numbers quoted in the World Almanac. So that was 1948, you know, obviously before all this Holocaust propaganda had taken over, you know.
Right. And so, yeah, I mean, we had more of these obvious numbers of actual people in respective countries totally blowing this out of the water. And even now, though, they are trying to back off gradually, even though in many parts of Europe, for example, you can still go to jail for questioning 6 million. The official Jewish sources are bringing it down because of the internet.
Yeah, right.
They realize people are waking up. They're trying to claim 1 million or something. Aren't they claiming 1 million currently?
Yeah.
But you'll still go to jail if you don't say 6 million. And, you know,
Germany. Mm-hmm. They're probably the most strict about it. At ground zero, where all the evidence of that shit never happened would be, is
right
there. And they're the most cucked out. They're just completely defeated people in their spirit and everything. It's all, it's so sad. It's occupied. It's an occupied nation. And then, you know, most of the people there probably are so brainwashed that they have no idea, you know, what, you know, the brainwashing, the denazification or whatever that they did after the war. You know, that's really sad.
Oh, I could believe that.
Once a proud people.
The youth now are certainly divided. I mean, I met a gentleman visiting here about a decade ago, maybe a little less than that, from Germany. And he seemed among those who have been completely brainwashed on this official narrative. But I'm sure there are others who have been taught from their grandparents and the like.
Some of them know the truth. Oh, yeah. They just keep their mouth shut because they'll go to prison. Now, here's the really crazy part about, okay, this stuff we're talking about, we're on the air right now, we're saying it in public. If you're on record anywhere denying it and you go to Germany, say we're going on vacation to Germany, they can fucking arrest you. You're considered a criminal there, period. If you are on denying the Holocaust anywhere in the world, but as soon as you step foot in their, you know, under their laws, you're in their country, right? They can arrest you, and you know, I believe they've even done that before.
So even though you and I are Americans, and it's under our freedom of speech laws, perfectly legal for us to discuss this here in this country.
Yeah,
we could go visit.
But if you go to Germany, you could be put under arrest. Me or you both would go to jail for sure.
Yeah, so
for Holocaust.
Their idea is internationally, they don't recognize.
You can't. No, of course not. It's a crime there to even discuss this shit, to even talk about
and
it.
So,
it's literally a crime. So I don't
and
know
what happened
to if that can't set off red flags to people that in 22 countries you can go to jail for talking about this shit. Just talking about, there is no other narrative in the world that you can go to jail for discussing. There isn't anything. There's no topic except this topic. In the entire world that you can go to jail for just discussing. That doesn't set off red flags to most people, you know, when they find that out. I don't know what will.
Yeah, that's a really great point right there.
Hey, it looks
that's
like we
really
have someone who joined us. I think this is your friend.
Is that my buddy Willie McRed Pilly?
Yes, it is.
Hey, what's up, Will?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, man, thanks for hopping in.
Yeah.
We're just over here exposing the hoax.
we're here discussing the Holocaust. Yeah, introduce yourself. What can I call you, sir?
Just call me Will.
Will?
Yep.
How's it going? Thanks for joining us.
So I wanted to mention Ernst Zundel. So what happened to him? You know, he was in the early 90s met with David Cole and David Cole's
right.
Jewish, and David Cole, right. They both went to Auschwitz, and they did forensic studies there, and basically just proved, you know, everything, and
right. blew it apart.
At least for Auschwitz, right? So Auschwitz number originally was 4 million, I think, just for that camp. Then they reduced
yeah, that's
it
why
to
I heard that before.
1.1 million in 1989. But so that reduces it down, you know, the official number to at least down to 3 million, right? You know, saying that their other camps account for the aggregate, right? So but you can't say that. You can't say what their placard says at Auschwitz. Now, you can't do the math. You're not allowed to be logical about it. So,
right. Yeah, they don't accept facts or truth as a defense there, not at all. That was
right.
even one of those trials. I think it was
exactly
Sylvia Stahl.
What the judge said in Hammerbeck's trial. That's exactly
yeah.
what the judge said in Ernst Zundel's trial. It said it doesn't
oh, yeah,
matter.
Said it over and over again.
Yeah, it doesn't matter that you.
No.
That it's truth. It's the matter
it's
is
in
that
the Nuremberg
you said it.
Charter too.
Yeah, the judge said it himself. It doesn't matter that it's the truth. It's the law that you can't deny it. So,
right.
so the whole
yeah.
the whole premise is they don't even care. They don't care
no.
what the truth is. It's just that you're not allowed to talk about it.
Right.
You're not allowed to talk about it. And so Ernst Zundel was actually, I think he spent 2 years in the Canadian prison in
right.
solitary confinement. And then he was extradited to Germany after that, where he spent another
oh, wow.
5 years, got the maximum sentence there
wow.
for 5 years, just for investigating it, just for investigating it. A really nice guy. I mean, a really, really nice guy.
It's also it's somebody's at trial there in Germany now. If they get an attorney and the attorney tries to defend them at all, the attorney goes to jail.
Yeah,
that's how
well,
fucking
right,
crazy.
Right,
it is.
That's correct. So what they have now is they have all of this is so you know people hear if enough people learn this, the whole thing just goes. And so all they have now is just censorship and throwing everyone in jail and taking away people's arms so that they can, you know, genocide them, kill them, murder them in number, you know, numbers of no qualms.
That's what
if you
they
go
did
back
in the Bolshevik
and look
Revolution,
at it, it's all, it's
right?
all in the, yeah, that's right. They've done it in that. They did it in the Bolshevik Revolution. They did it in the French Revolution. Before that, there was Oliver Cromwell that, in Britain, and there was the British Revolution. Nobody really knows about that one too much, but Oliver
no.
Cromwell
yes.
was a traitor. That,
I mean, I've heard the name,
Will,
but I don't remember.
Will,
wow.
yeah. I would really appreciate that since you touch on it. I've been very interested in getting more information on this era with Cromwell in England and also the French Revolution and the Jewish role. Please, if you could tell us whatever you could on both of those topics.
Awesome, yeah.
Sure. I'll just preface it with, it started out with learning from a book by Nesta Webster called World Revolution, where she talks about kind of the origins of communism with the Jacobins and Bakunin and Robespierre. Yeah, the Jacobins were the communists before the communists.
Okay.
And they were the agitators of the French Revolution. So the French Revolution
right.
occurred around the same time as the American Revolution.
Right.
And a little, yeah, so, and, you know, I can't go into great detail about all of this, but prior to the French Revolution, there was the British Revolution, and that was when Oliver Cromwell made a deal and let them back in. After they had been, you know, kicked out, and they'd been kicked out for, I don't know, a couple hundred years. I don't know the exact number, but they eventually worked their way back in. And this was in the 1600s. And that's when the banks began to arrive, the Rothschild Bank. So the Rothschild started, you know, Meyer Amstel Rothschild started his bank in 1700s in Germany, I believe, was the first one. And then his five sons expanded out into Britain, where the biggest bank was. No surprise there, right? Think about the British Empire being conflated with international banking and how it went around and was the imperial nation all over the world, right?
Oh,
well,
yeah. That they were
conflated with international Jewry and the international banking cartel, which was in its sort of fledgling state at that time, but by no means was it any kind of amateur. They knew what they were doing, and they had 2,000 years to prepare.
Didn't Waterloo have something to do with that? Like where the loss at Waterloo was, where they were able to manipulate the stock market or something? Yeah, that'd be cool. I want to hear about that. Awesome.
Yeah. So what happened there was the Battle of Waterloo was Napoleon's last stand against them, and so there was the battle between the Duke of Wellington for the Britain and Napoleon of France, and that final battle. So Rothschild got insider information, and I guess it was, you know, this sounds kind of stupid, but they used carrier pigeons at that time. So I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
somehow,
hey man, that's right. And drums, they used to communicate with drums over a long distance. You know, carrier pigeon, right?
Well, so he went into the trading floor, where that's the trading floor of that time, and pretended he had already learned that France had lost. And then he went in, this was in Britain, he went in and he looked all dejected, and everybody took that as, oh, Britain lost. So everybody sold all their stocks that, I don't know, their stocks were in, you know, and like war commodities or whatever, and then what he did is he bought them all back up, and that was the single most like biggest scam in history, where he actually, oh man, that's where Rothschild really made out and really just got incredibly rich from that.
Did they finance?
Because they didn't lose the war. They won the war.
Yeah. What? Right. Oh, yeah, totally.
They financed both sides of it, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, that's been the history. People like to use that in, as far as like in World War II with,
then you get all these fools thinking that Hitler was financed by him. Oh, I know, morons.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was some of that. I think there was, obviously the bank, you can't escape the banks. I mean, the banks
in the beginning,
are, right?
A lot of firms did business with NSD. Why wouldn't
they?
A lot of them did, yes. That doesn't mean that they financed his rise. They invested. They invested in the they saw what was happening. They wanted a piece of that. Of course, that was no problem then. But that doesn't mean that he was financed by Rothschild. Absolutely not. He's the only one to ever put a Rothschild in prison.
Right. So, you know, this is a debate I'd love to have with people is, you know, every people that understand, they already understand that international Jewry is terrible. Everybody agrees on that. They understand the problems that we're facing right now. But when we have the argument about who was Hitler and, like, was he just a total, there's a lot of people that think that he was just a puppet, right? I don't believe this. This is really far-fetched.
I know you don't.
Just because,
right, a lot of people claim that. A lot of people claim that because of the financing, right? Because of the financing of these sources.
Yeah.
A lot of people try to discredit him in that way.
Yeah, but they don't understand the labor treasury note or how labor-backed currency works. Because that would explain where the meteoric rise came from, not from a bunch of debt cash being pumped into there. They got rid of all that. Their work, it was completely abolished. Usury was punishable under death. Right there, it made it illegal to be a Jew. Right there in Germany, that was the one even doing that before they had the Nuremberg laws or anything. The three Nuremberg laws, before they had those, you know, they just made usury punishable by death, and that was right there.
you know, that was probably what was the major thing that changed everything.
And Will, what you were mentioning about the French Revolution, well, basically, it was in their best interests, right? I mean, this was after the era, as far as when Napoleon was in power, I mean, was he someone who looked out for his people against the Jewish infiltration?
Yeah.
That's what I suspected.
That's what I've heard, too.
That's why I figured history books demonize him so much, because he was a nationalist in the true sense.
Right, because he was, exactly.
He was. He was pro-people.
Totally makes sense.
You know, he had a lot on his plate, because there were so many eruptions of communism, pre-communism, Jacobism, or whatever you want to call it, Jacobins.
Yeah.
And the early phases, if you're taking a step back out of it for a second, it's really helpful to understand that this was a holy war against Christianity and against...
Sure. Against so was World War II?
The existing order, right? And you can understand when you have a Talmud that says, when your religious book says that everyone else is shit, slave, they should all be killed, and you are the God's chosen people, you are the chosen people of the world, and you've morphed your, you know, what was your Old Testament covenant. And then when your Messiah, Jesus, came and you didn't accept him, he was a good, benevolent, loving God, and you didn't accept Jesus, you became, this is where I agree with E. Michael Jones, though, you became the revolutionary, like, innately revolutionary.
Logos rising, baby.
Yeah.
Right?
So I kind of got, yeah, but just understanding, the bigger picture, and that this war has been going on for centuries. This war against Christianity and against the natural order.
Absolutely. So they've made Hitler their poster demon child for all this.
Yeah.
And basically, 1933 was just an expulsion. It was 1933 was just another ordinary expulsion, number 109 or 110, whatever number you want to put on it, but that's all it fucking was. There was no six, there were no homicidal gas chambers. 0.0.
Yeah. And it wasn't hate. It was like, we need to survive. We don't want to die anymore. You're killing us. You're absolutely destroying us, and we have to do something. You know, we're not working. It's not compatible. I mean, Russia was probably one of the most benevolent. They gave them the Pale of Settlement before all this, right? You know, this was like just 200 years ago or so. The Pale of Settlement was a massive landmass that encompassed like everything up from Georgia, all the way through Ukraine and through Eastern Europe, all the way up to the Baltic Sea, like where the Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia. Giant landmass, but that wasn't enough for them. No, they were persecuted because they were being forced there. And, you know, it just makes you go, what the hell? What is wrong with you people?
They want the whole world, bro. It's never been about Palestine or some small piece of real estate. It's about the whole fucking world and fulfilling the mandates and dictates of the Torah.
Oh, that reminds me. That's another way people try to discredit Hitler, by saying because of him negotiating on this Palestine resettlement, that makes him controlled opposition or something.
Right. Well, they don't understand what happened. He had a meeting with the Grand Mufti and called off the Havara trade thing, the Havara agreement, because the Grand Mufti of Palestine said that that the Jews were scumbags and they didn't want him there either.
Okay.
His original plan was the original you know, he didn't want to subject Madagascar, the Palestinians.
Absolutely.
He didn't want to subject
them.
Because
he knew they were going to harm him. Yeah. And you guys have all seen the quote from 1921 or whatever it is, where he says, if they ever succeed in building their
place in Palestine. They'll use it as a refuge, a haven for international criminals, budding crooks, and scoundrels, which is exactly what it's become.
I'm going to recommend that if you go to a website called Kodo.com, you can order $700 worth of books. Kodo. CODOH.com.
I saw that before. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. All so right. They have the whole, like, basically the gold standard library for, like, I mean, it's
nice.
A lot.
Wow. They got all the, like, you're talking about revisionist books, right?
They have a book on it. What's that?
Revisionist books.
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. Where you'll get Tell the Truth and Shame the Devil by.
Right.
Gerard Menuhin, he's Yehudi Menuhin. Yehudi Menuhin was a Jewish violinist who was a proponent of Alexander Solzhenitsyn. He was he was a man of justice. He was a good man. And Gerard Menuhin is also a fantastic man. He's British and he's a quarter or half Jewish, I think. And like his dad was Jewish. So like nobody hates Jews. That's not what's going on here.
No, not
what's
at all.
Going on here is that people love people and people want want everybody to be equal. We want diversity in the world,
right.
And everything they're doing is against what they're promoting. So they're saying
right,
diversity,
while
they mix everyone together and they try to make everybody into one singular homogenous race. The Byzantine solution.
Yeah, but there wasn't a violent solution. That was the period in Rome, like the 100 years or whatever after the time period.
Yeah.
Let's see here. It was the Empire of East Rome set up by Roman leaders after the Jews had destroyed Rome. The empire functioned in Constantinople for 1,200 years, the longest duration of any empire in the history of the world. And all they did, they made it, okay, here it is. It was Ezra Pound who launched upon a study of Byzantine civilization and reminded the world of this happily non-Jewish land. Pound derived his non-violent formula for controlling the Jews. The answer to the Jewish problem is simple, he said. Keep them out of banking, out of education, and out of government. And this is how simple it is. There is no need to kill the Jews. In fact, every pogrom in history has played into their hands and has, in many instances, been cleverly instigated by them. Get the Jews out of banking, and they cannot control the economic life of the community. Get the Jews out of education, and they cannot pervert the minds of the young to the subversive doctrine.
Yeah.
Yes,
so that's the solution. No, that is the solution. I totally agree with that, but how do you enforce it? How do you enforce
it? People think that us talking about these manipulations, this control from the Jews and distortion of history, I mean, they accuse us as being hateful and racist.
Oh, absolutely.
When all we want, we don't want exploitation. We don't want a parasitic behavior. We don't want this sort of subversion.
We don't want debt currency. We want debt-free currency. Why don't we go, that's where the root of it all really is. We can't fix anything if we don't fix the money. There's nothing going to get fixed. If the money doesn't,
but everything's
the money
justified,
doesn't get fixed, there's nothing.
Everything's justified because of this Holocaust, as far as the censorship,
right.
As far as this double standard. And even though, Gregory, you mentioned a lot of the children these days...
They're desperate to hide the labor treasury note. That's why they're desperate. That's what the Holocaust story does. It deflects from all the things that everybody could have, the whole world could have it, if they would just back their money with their own people.
Well, even though a lot of children these days don't even know to have such a fear of being called an anti-Semite, they don't care or aren't
right.
taught it enough. This Common Core, for example, is trying to enforce more and more mandatory Holocaust programming at all levels of education. So,
yeah.
I mean, what can we focus on?
Be maintained.
We have to continue debunking this. We have to keep talking about
right.
it. Make it more common for people to be able to talk
That's
about
why you're
to listen
for having
to people.
Us on, huh, Will?
Well, that, yeah.
Yeah, that's why he's awesome. That's why Richard is awesome for having us on, because we do have to continue to exposing this.
Yeah, I don't do this very much. I like to do this
either.
Because it's most of the time I'm I'm in an anguish over all this. It's like
that's where you gotta get
it's such bad
that's the
news.
Problem. It'll take over. You gotta be above that. Raise your vibration above that. It's really easy to do because it's all really dark, negative shit. It's super easy to raise above that. It really isn't hard at all.
Yeah. Well, it would be great if you could deliver the messages to people without them just instantly going into this defense mode. Where a lot of it has to do, I try to break down what the body of that whole defense mechanism is in people. A lot of it is just the indoctrination, but a lot of it is also
they get scared right away. It's scary,
and I think it's just unpleasant. It's unpleasant conversation, and people we're a society that's used to instant gratification, and if unpleasant conversation comes up, they're like, nah, I don't know. I just wish more people would get passionate about this. And
well, that's I agree with that. Don't you, Richard? We need more people.
Well, definitely.
You can't talk about this stuff in public. That's the problem. How can you address anybody on any platform? Because they control the narrative everywhere. And any legitimate opposition is labeled anti-Semitism, so they are able to right away. You can't say anything. There is no playing on the PC playing field. We don't have a chance.
Well, yes, even in the independent media, most of them are pretty shy on this topic. It's really only with a few here and there.
They control all their paychecks.
They call you a Nazi.
And if they don't control their paychecks, they'll just slander them in the media, and they'll be instantly destroyed.
Yep,
anybody that steps out of
they take away your ability to make money. Anybody who speaks out about this stuff, that's exactly what they do. I lost my job over it. I was teaching music. I was teaching drums, and they fired me over me having public statements about Jewish supremacism. I was fired over it.
Yeah.
So that's why this is important. I mean, they're still basing so much. If we are able to more thoroughly debunk this Holocaust narrative, I think that could get people questioning and lose the taboo of questioning this more and more of their control of so much.
Right. I think away after Christ, murdered. What?
Oh, go ahead, Greg, finish up, and then
I was just going to say, after Christ was murdered, they weren't allowed to talk about him. People weren't. And it's kind of the same. I'm not saying Hitler was Christ, anything like Christ, although he's, in my book, he's, I dig him. But you're not allowed to talk about Hitler now, right, in Germany and places like that. Like, originally, Christians they would kill Christians if they found them. So,
Who's they?
Whoever the freaking, I guess probably Jews, but whoever was enforcing, Christianity right away, is the people that knew the truth about Christ, they didn't talk about it in public. It was not only illegal; it was a death sentence.
Yeah, if you want to get good, powerful truth in the Bible about Christ, read Matthew, Mark,
that's
Luke,
all he
John,
did was
and
fight
Acts.
Them. Oh yeah, John's full of those.
Read those.
And I have a list of all
the
times.
They're quick.
Yeah, I have a list of all the times it says in the Bible how the Jews wanted to kill Christ, and it's a big old long list. You can find those all over the place. The New Testament is one of the most anti-Semitic pieces of literature you'll ever have, and it's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. It's literally my Bible.
Many suggest that many interpretations of the New Testament are highly Judaized or made to be rather
popular.
Yeah, the Scofield Bible. Is the Scofield Bible and the NIV, the New International Version, is that the same thing?
The NIV? I don't think so. No, I think NIV is a different one.
Okay.
Yeah, they're all King James. There's so many different versions, but the gist of everything is still, you can still figure it out in any of those ways. They're kicking a lot of, they just omit stuff in those, though.
like a lot of those things where Christ was talking about fighting the Jews, because that was the biggest thing he did, you know. They I'm sure that they've gotten rid of a lot of that evidence in their Bibles, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
What do the Jews hate more than anything? More than anything. And who? Who do they hate more than anything?
Christ, the truth.
Yes. There you go. And why is that? There you go. Why is that? Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. That's the right answer. They hate him more than Hitler. They hate him more than anything.
Well, they're supposed to believe he hasn't come yet, but many suggest their whole religion is based on materialism and this lifetime rather than the hereafter.
Well, also, Christ exposed them and fought them to the day he died, and they murdered him. So, of course, they hate him. They still hate him.
So, have you ever read any of Tex Mars books?
I've seen parts. I have some parts of it. Holy Serpent of the Jews.
Yeah, well, he's done quite a bit of research, and so it's not God's chosen people; it's the serpent. And the serpent being,
you know, the dollar
they
sign
worship
is
the
just
serpent,
a,
and
that's
bee
what the dollar
in
sign
the tree
is.
Of
it's
life.
A serpent.
Right, right,
the
and so is
the
medical
sign
symbol.
Is the holy serpent.
Yeah. The medical symbol too. Right. Yeah, so they worship the serpent in the tree of life, and of the physical body of all of the Jewish people. So there's no God,
the Orthodox,
because they are God.
Right.
So
there you go.
So of course, and so they're going to call themselves, but their God is
Lucifer,
and the serpent is their God. So, you know, I mean, if someone wants to come on and debate this, that's fine, but I wouldn't.
I wish somebody would.
Yeah.
I wish somebody would come on and debate this. I would shut up while you guys try. Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, I do hear. I would be curious to hear more of your philosophies on this. I mean, I've heard others suggest much of the same. There's a very popular book by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, for example, that
Synagogue of Satan.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a cool
dude. Right. I have that book. I just listened to him last night for the first time with David Duke. I had a podcast.
Oh, wow.
They made one
yesterday.
Yeah, you should check out on David Duke's site. Like, I don't see him anymore on YouTube or anything. He's a human rights activist, David Duke. And, you know, that's the big red pill. If people hear the name and they just go into a spasm instantly.
They think he's KKK,
And they see, like, people being lynched and all these, like, all this crazy stuff that they've just been indoctrinated with. And even I cringed the first time when my friend 2 years ago told me, hey, you know, dude, it's the Jews. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about, dude? I don't have any problem with Jews. I've never had any problem with them. They've always been our friends and everything. And I'm like, so what do you mean? You got to explain this. Because I was open-minded. I wanted to understand and it was even an Ashkenazi Jew that when I was like, hey, Ben Shapiro needs to be president, right? Because I was really impressed with him at the time.
Chuck, great.
I know.
Sorry, that's great.
But I didn't understand the fact, and I'm like, why not? He goes, because he's a, and this is like, you know, in social media, and his answer was, because he's a neocon, right? So, and I'm like, what the hell does that mean? I had no idea what that meant, and it took months for me to understand it. And
it's a gradual thing for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, look, Ben Shapiro is one of the most fantastic debaters of all time in terms of, like, debating cultural Marxism, right? But he wants us all to go over to Israel and fight wars, these wars that don't do anything for us, for Israel, which is just as bad. It's just as bad. It's just the other there's a two-headed snake. Yeah. There's Zionism and Bolshevism. So he can debate Bolshevism and promote Zionism. And either way, they end up winning.
And then we have a lot of people in the truther movement out there who try to spin that to be anti-Jew-wise, really, where they'll try to say that it's the National Socialists and the Communists on the two sides of that, when what you said is more accurate, the Bolshevism and Zionism.
Right.
Because I've heard communism and Zionism both described as variants of political Jewry.
Yes, that's correct.
Well, yeah, they are Jews. Yeah,
that's it.
Communism is Judaism. So Zionism is just the political arm of Judaism, you know? It's just a kosher word for Jews. You know, you can't, they have way too many sects and everything. They're just infiltrated everything. Anything that was once good, they've also ruined, you know what I mean? Oh, man.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't be even having this conversation because I'm like the least racist person and you'll ever meet. If my race, which I don't consider to be white anymore, I consider it to be Anglo and a mixed race of Anglo, German, and other European races, because I don't put myself in that category anymore, because that's their category for us, and it's very derogatory. Honestly, it's to put us as you're white. And then, you know, I mean, people use
thought of that.
And we are a lot of different mixed races of European peoples, and we have incredible redeeming qualities about us as far as how we've benefited the world. And then if we want to get into things like, I'm getting off on tangents here. But
we deserve a homeland.
Yeah, right? Everybody does. I agree. Why not, right?
At least one. I mean, can we have like a few square miles? You know, I mean, I'm exaggerating, obviously, but we're looking at the way that things are going, right? And it doesn't really matter. I mean,
well,
Jews
are
the
only ones allowed to have
an
ethno state, apparently.
Yeah, that's correct. And they're not going after, I don't know, they're not ethnic cleansing. I don't know, who are they not ethnic cleansing now? I don't... Who are they not ethnic cleansing right now? China?
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. They're bolstering China up right now because they're hedging their bets over there.
Japan always stayed pretty homogenous. That's why they were able to, you know.
Yeah, I think Jews can't convince the Orient to race mix as easily as they're able to convince the other races. They're certainly not promoting that for other Jews. Now, that's the grand exception. I saw an interesting post rejected. Someone recently tried to make a post with a picture of a black girl and a Jewish girl and a black man saying, oh, Jews and blacks are such beautiful people. They deserve each other. And, you know, it would be wonderful if they could be together. And it was rejected. This post goes against our community standards. No one was able to see it, but we thought we'd privately let you know this. So you can't say, oh, you know, they're both beautiful races. They should be able to race mix. No, that's hate speech. If you say it about a Jew with someone, it's amazing.
No,
I
definitely, you're not allowed to say that.
Well, I definitely grabbed that, save that JPEG.
A lot of double standards.
Well,
speak
be careful
everywhere.
Because they're in your phone, too. You know, if you backtrace your IP address up to... I don't know if you're who you're with, but your cell phone company, you might end up at law enforcement research team where they're in your cell phone, going through everything, going through all your pictures. This will be your phone carrier somewhere.
I'm sure I'll convert a lot before they get through all my data.
All they're gonna see in mine is a bunch of memes about World War II and drinking, you know, whatever. Go ahead.
If guys are looking at mine, if guys are looking at mine, I think a lot of them may get converted before they're done looking through my data.
Thinking.
Yeah,
I got a lot of exactly.
Everything on my home.
We don't exactly have a choice, right?
Yeah, right.
Just,
I don't think there's any. We have no privacy. There's no such thing. Zero. It doesn't exist. That's a myth if you think everybody has any privacy.
Absolutely.
In this world.
Yeah, that's why I don't get too hung up on trying because,
I don't even try, Let them find out what they want about me. That's fine. We're just trying to help. We're just trying to, we look for the truth and we try to spread the truth. That's all we're doing. That's it.
Well, yeah, we're destroying the supremacy and the Jews are maintaining it and accusing us of it.
Right.
Well, you know, I say that the Jews, that's they are, I mean, especially the ADL, it's a mafia, and it's a white supremacist mafia. And so yeah. I'm just putting back their terms that they give us back on them because that's where they belong. I mean, that really is, right. I mean, that's the absolute truth, is that they're, you know, all of a sudden there's this white supremacy problem. Here I grew up around all these different races. I've had friends from different races all my life. I've dated women of different races.
Different religions, different races.
Absolutely. The most open-minded guy you'll ever meet. All of a sudden I realize that the people that have my same skin color, the Europeans, are being on the chopping block for being basically ethnic cleansed forever. And then you look into it a little bit and like, holy crap, we were 30% of the world population 100 years ago, and now we're 7 or 8. Well, why is that? Well, okay, World War I, World War II, all the other wars between then and now, all the miscegenation and brainwashing and social engineering and all of the mass immigration that's happened. That's why. I mean, it's not obvious, and then that's what's happened. And why is that happening? Right. Because we're being discriminated against in the most horrific kind of way, and it's clandestine. And it has to stop. It just has to stop. Nobody wants. I think that there's probably a lot of, and to be made. I like to put myself in other people's shoes because I'm a very compassionate person, and and I have to put myself into the normal Jewish people.
Very good.
There's like normal Jewish people, their shoes, right? A lot of them don't even know what's going on with this.
No, a lot of them don't.
They hear us talking about it, right? And they get scared and freaked out. And because once someone discovers the magnanimity of the criminality that this organized people have perpetrated against humanity, it's
the most organized
staggering.
People in the world. It is. Mind blowing.
Yeah. No, I stand in awe of what they've accomplished.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, absolutely.
And that's one thing we all can learn from them is we should all be united. They're the most organized people in the world. They are incredibly organized, and we have none of that. No, that's the thing. That's why we should look up to them in that. That's what we should emulate, you know?
I agree. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much infighting.
Absolutely.
So much infighting, like you said, these retards in the so-called truth movement that fucking think everything's a conspiracy, and they think there's a lot of them, but, you know, and then they go on that, it's all divided about, you know, was Hitler a good guy or a bad guy, and, you know, all that shit. It's pretty torn up.
Well, people do go through different phases. We mentioned how each of us, it took a while to accept that the Holocaust was a myth. And we didn't believe it all at once because we were taught ingrained from a young age with this narrative. But yeah, you eventually are willing to look at more and more information and become more and more convinced as more and more facts are available to you, where finally you get to the tipping point, and then before you know it, it's been a while since you had passed that tipping point and you get to really absorb the ramifications of it. You start to look into a lot of similar information along the same lines. And then, before you know it, you see that most people have a lot of information you'd have to subject them to get to where your perception level is at.
It blows them away.
Yeah.
They don't even know it. Yeah, it freaks them out. You're right.
So you pick and choose.
When
you try to expose things to people, you have to start picking and choosing depending on the person and what you want to reveal or get them on starting down that rabbit hole, should they choose, right?
Yeah. You have to think like a Freemason because Freemasonry is different degrees, right? So, you know, the Masons have their levels.
Yeah.
They have up to 1 to 33 degrees, right? And so the 33rd degree Masons are the ones who know everything, right? Like Nelson Mandela was a 33rd degree Freemason. FDR was a 32nd degree Freemason.
Hitler got rid of all Freemasonry. Opened them all up too. All the lodges. He opened them for the entire public to see.
Ah. So, because that's sort of the heart of it. Right there, because that's where they discuss everything, And then, but they also right. discuss it to have the Council on Foreign Relations. That's a big one, which I know a little bit about. There's a book called The Bilderberg Group, right? It's
oh yeah,
by Daniel Istulin, I think is the name.
I also always credit.
A little bit.
I also credit the material William Cooper collected for his book.
Behold the Pale Horse.
Behold
the Pale Horse. Yeah.
Yes.
I
mean, even
get.
Though he never really put everything, I think, in place regarding the Jews, but as far as all these organizations and influence from all these players, I mean, he collected data from a lot of colleagues of his and basically presented his and their findings, at, you know, from all their sources. And just here, you know, you could decide for yourself. In some chapters, he gets into UFO material, supposedly, allegedly, government documents. A lot of people wonder if that was submitted to him to discredit him on the other information. I mean, he even questioned that later in life. Was that, you know, presented to me to kookify any of these other topics? But when you mention all of these organizations, the subversion of our country, and yeah, just the whole chronology, you mentioned the Council on Foreign Relations, Freemasonry, and of course Zionism, but also just the League of Nations and the UN following it. A lot of these strategies, aggressive economic warfare, how it relates to the laws of electricity is particularly interesting. This one document that he presented in there, and he was one of the early publishers of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion.
Didn't Henry Ford publish those too?
Well, at least in, I'm not sure of that, but I just know in Cooper's era, there weren't too many versions in print yet in English when he put out Behold a Pale Horse in 1991. And there's a chapter that has the protocols in its entirety in much smaller print than the rest of the book, so they could fit it all.
Amazing.
Yeah, they there's four volumes in Henry Ford's book. I haven't read it yet.
Right.
Does he probably has all of those? Also, in Andrew Carrington Hitchcock's book, I think he lays out the protocols too. But yeah, the early publisher was a man that leaked it, I think, and I think the Romanov. There's some. I've heard different stuff. I can't speak to it very intelligently, but around the Romanov when they were killed. This is like the early 20th century when those were leaked, and that would make sense.
Yeah. They
call them a forgery, but that makes no sense because everything in them
everything's
is exactly
lining up.
What is happening.
That's right. It's all lining up.
The proof's in the pudding, and that's probably the quintessential thing that's probably where the proof's in the pudding came from. Yeah. The saying.
Yeah, that's very true, though. It's all lining up. I mean, they insist that they're a forgery, but
even
they can't.
Even before the protocols, I mean, many even just cite Talmudic influence itself as playing a large role in the mindset and how so much of history has led to subversion and to why we are just trying to stop and have an equal playing field for all races, including our own. You have an interesting perspective, though, on... I mean, I think that all the European people are pretty similar, or I don't think of them as mixed race. But, I mean, I do see your point, the whole term of white people. You know, I do see that as being used in a derogatory, a trivializing sort of way. And it does further the ability to act like we don't have any culture or... you know, anything to preserve, to justify preserving or having homeland the way other races still have the Jews upholding their rights to. But definitely all these incidents have been so distorted. And we mentioned the era of Cromwell and the French Revolution. We mentioned the Bolshevik Revolution. Of course, mm-hmm. World War II. But this Holocaust definitely is something that they're trying to pass further censorship laws across the whole planet with. We already have most all of Europe in stronghold on Europe. Their goal is America. And, of course, many say the First and Second Amendments are joined at the hip in our country here.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we need to defend both of these and not let this Holocaust propaganda take away what it means to have the freedoms of an American.
And I mean, we're being hit with a literal machine gun barrage of bills in Congress that are going through it. And it's very scary to watch, the governor or the governor of Florida up against the wall with his yarmulke and signing a bill that says criminalizing Americans for the wrong speech. These are politicians. We need to start calling these politicians out. We need to start pointing them out exactly what they're doing. We need to start studying what they're doing. I don't do this. I'm really immersed in the history right now. But the more we call them out, the more we write to them and say, we know what you're doing. And what you're doing is evil. And you need to stop doing it. And we're aware of it.
They'll twist everything around, whatever you say.
Yeah, it's like the prospects are they seem pretty grim. There's a book, that gives an overview of the revolutions called The Nameless War. And it's by, I forgot where, I think you can get it on David Duke's website. But it's really good. It goes through all of the European revolutions and it kind of ties everything together. It's a very small, short book. Take you probably a couple hours to read the whole thing.
Well, dude, you're a wealth of information on all this stuff. I love that you came on with this. Right, Richard? I think it's great. Thanks for having my buddy on. I really appreciate that, man.
Yeah, well, likewise. I appreciate you thinking to invite him and share the floor. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. I have another friend I met through the station recently. He has a website, or actually it's a channel on YouTube with the name Peaceful Pogrom Now, as part of what
there
he themes it. And that is really what we're trying to promote here at the heart of everything. And the whole labeling of us as being a violent, hateful speech is how they're trying to we're getting linked to domestic terrorism more and more, this white supremacy and these patsies for these shooting incidents. They're trying to start linking those at the hip as well with all these laws they're passing, and that's also all of this seems to relate, the shootings, the Holocaust narrative, and the attacks on our free speech.
It is all related.
Yep, it absolutely is. They're trying, really, it's their way of stopping people from discovering the truth, calling them terrorists. It's just no coincidence that 9/11 came right after the inception of the internet when people started to get access to this kind of information.
Pretty much.
And so 9/11 happened so that they could install the surveillance system that they've done through Magal Securities. Magal Securities is if you look at MAGL Security. Magal Security, look it up and look at what they have about 12 or 15 different lines of business in their company, and one of them is the smart technologies. And if you go and look this up, they'll use the term command and control. Okay, so they basically it's the 5G and it's like all this whole network of just
5G is a whole nother topic.
Israel is, it's just an Israeli company that.
Yeah, I know, and they're not even going to have it there.
The United States.
They're not even going to have 5G in Israel.
No, of course not.
They don't want it. They know it. They invented it.
Yeah. No, 5G is genocide for the Goyim and mind control.
Yep. Of course it is.
So look into that. Look into Magal Security. It's scary. That's a scary, scary thing. I found out about that through Michael Collins Piper's book, The Golem, about Israel's nuclear. Maybe next time we could talk about the Kennedy and why he was murdered. They murdered.
Well, if you want to get into the Piper stuff, we all love what he has to say. He's the one who pretty much broke the whole case of who killed JFK.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
And why?
Will.
And why?
Yeah, Will, you're definitely welcome. Either future shows here with Gregory, or if you wanted to come on for a solo discussion of a
That'd
topic.
Be awesome. Yeah, you should have him on. You should. Yeah, definitely. I'll call him.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just let me know. Just let me know when you're doing it. I haven't been doing this too much, but.
Yeah, well, I thought you'd be good at it, and that's why I'm very glad you did, because I think it's an awesome idea for him to have you on.
Likewise. Yeah, thank you both. And Gregory,
you're doing a great service.
And Gregory, I could definitely see you being a future radio host yourself. So.
Oh, wow. That's a great compliment. I got to learn how to quit interrupting everybody, though. I get excited.
Oh, that's the passion.
She heard that one. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I get excited, and there's so much that my brain wants to spew out, and it's the same thing. You're like, you know, so I have to rein it in. I'm like, I'm not trying to interrupt anybody, but I just, you know, I get lost.
That's all right.
I'll get better at it.
Excellent. Well, yeah. Well, Gregory, are there any last thoughts that you had? Holocaust topic.
Yeah, just that the Holocaust is bullshit. Don't believe what you're not allowed to question.
Definitely.
There you go. Don't believe what you are not allowed to question. I don't.
Well, there's one last thought about it.
Please.
That there was a Holocaust. There's been many Holocausts, tons of them, and they can, you know, pick and choose which ones they want to use pictures from to make their own.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the reality. When you own the media, when you own all the banks, you have supremacism over all of humanity. You can just say and do whatever you want, make up whatever story you want, co-opt any photographs of the Rhine-Meadow camp, death camp for German soldiers, or the actual Holocaust of bombing, carpet bombing dozens of German cities at the end of the war when Germany was already dead as a program of genocide against the Germans that you had already planned. So they had already planned to genocide, to ethnic cleanse, the Morgenthau plan. They would have done all away with every German if they were able to do that.
Germany must perish.
I think. Yeah, Germany must perish by Theodore Kaufman. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And that's
My phone's about to die. My phone's about to die.
It's been a pleasure, gentlemen.
Thanks for having me on.
Definitely. It's been a pleasure.
We'll be in touch. Okay. All right,
cheers.
Talk to you guys soon.
All right, guys.
Have a great night to you both.
All righty. Thanks.
You too.
And thank you to all the listeners as well. And we will speak again soon. Until then, transcend the construct. Regards.